most appropriate because we're going to be talking with Dr. Bruce Thompson, homeopath, to those that care to live the better life.
Yeah.
And we're talking today about, well, too sweet, you know.
Yes.
Welcome, Bruce. Nice to have you back on the microphone.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Takes us back to our Valentine's Day conversation, I think, slightly about all the sweet things in life.
Yeah.
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 Well, you know, here's the thing. Since I have been following very closely your advice, and sugar is not part of my life anymore much. But, you know, so black coffee is the order of the day. Of course, King is completely the opposite. He's got to have three sugars in his coffee.
Yeah. And three puddings.
Hey, yeah.
100%.
And you know, was it yesterday? I got the coffee cups mixed up.
Mm.
And
yeah.
And I took a swig of sweetened coffee. It nearly killed me. It was like an electric shock.
Yeah, Oscar. It does.
His response, his reaction was as if he was drinking bitter coffee that had no sugar. Guys. Coffee without sugar? Hey?
It's amazing. It's amazing. Can you believe it?
Well, the point is that one adjusts quite quickly because I was never really, you know, particularly dilly about lacing. Like King will have three. It has to be three teaspoons in his cup. No, that was. But I far prefer it black.
But
actually, it does me well.
You've also seen the impact on your blood test.
Yes.
What a massive impact it's had on your insulin health. So
you see, there is hope.
Yeah,
that's the point.
I was kind of wanting to talk about the whole concept of insulin sensitivity or insulin resistance today. You know, so it's obviously related to diet, but it's related to a number of things. So just as a kind of a broad introduction so that people understand what we're talking about. We're talking about receptor sensitivity or tissue receptor sensitivity to insulin. And an easy way to understand that is, you know, if you think about if you hear a very loud sound or you're at a concert and there's a lot of loud music, your ear receptors, the receptors to sound will downregulate because there's too much incoming, right? So that's why when you go from a loud room into a quiet room, it takes you a little while to start hearing things because your receptors have to upregulate again. So this whole concept around insulin resistance is about receptor sensitivity. So in broad strokes, the more insulin is circulating in your bloodstream, the louder the insulin is shouting at the cells, so the receptors on the cells will downregulate, so they become less sensitive to the insulin. So they become less effective at drawing in glucose into the cells to get it out of the bloodstream, which in the long term leads to high blood sugar and pre-diabetes, then diabetes. Okay, so that's a kind of a broad stroke understanding of insulin resistance.
Okay.
So, is that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It makes a lot of sense. Okay. However, for the non-medical professional, the notion of insulin and health, I think, is quite fuzzy. Certainly, my understanding.
Well, I'm gonna get into that. So, I want to explain today what the different areas that can be affected and the different reasons why we might have elevated insulin and increased insulin resistance. Okay. So there are different tissues, different parts of the body are affected. Every part of the body, I have to say, is affected. But we have some broad categories of area that are affected by insulin resistance. The liver. If the liver is primarily affected by the insulin resistance, then we get diabetes, right? If the ovaries are primarily affected, we get something called polycystic ovary disease, polycystic ovarian syndrome, PCOS, which is a growing problem, right? As all these things are, by the way. If the heart is the focus in this individual, then it's going to be cardiovascular disease. And if the brain is the core of the target, then we're going to have a higher chance of getting something called Alzheimer's. Okay. Which is, there's been a lot of literature around Alzheimer's in the last 10, 15 years relating to this type of diabetes that they're picking up. So, and it's also related to insulin resistance in the brain. Okay. So there's also a number of are there any questions before we go? I see quizzical looks.
More about a lifestyle change is maybe what I'm going through.
That's where we're getting to. So at the end of this, we're going to get to that.
Okay.
Right? So there are three broad reasons why we move into insulin resistance. The first is fat accumulation. So getting obese or getting too much fat. Really specifically visceral fat, so organ fats. However, it's kind of interesting area because being fat or being obese doesn't necessarily lead to diabetes or to insulin resistance. It's not, the one does not necessarily equal the other. And that's quite an interesting thing because you can have you can be obese but be metabolically healthy. And it's a curious thing that we need to understand, but we're not going to get into that today. It's a little bit too deep, but it really depends on how much fat there is and how you as an individual manage your fat. You manage your adipocytes, which are the cells that store fat. The second main driver of insulin resistance is stress. Okay, so the more stress you have, the more cortisol in your system, and likely the more visceral fat you have. It's a very, very complex mechanisms, but these are the sort of the general things that we see related to stress. And it will always be in conjunction with high sympathetic tone, so high being in a fight-flight state. So, you know, we've spoken about that quite a lot, and we've spoken about it on the show before, this sympathetic-parasympathetic balance. That will also lead to insulin resistance. And then liver fat. And it's interesting to note that most, you know, if you go back 50 years, 60 years, all people with fatty liver disease were alcoholics. Today, 25% of the world's population have fatty liver disease, non-alcohol related. 25% of the world's population. And that is in the last 50 years, that growth, which is insane. Okay, so it's about what we get to, really. It's all about diet.
Wow.
It's all about diet. Okay.
Sure. Okay.
Right. So, if there's no questions, I'll carry on.
Carry on. I'm so depressed already.
Yeah. Table. I mean, we might as well.
Well, no, it's not depressing because we have so much control over this. It's just choices that we make.
So right? We can't even de-stress with alcohol now. Because, I mean...
You're hitting the liver from two angles.
Yeah, you're trying to lower the stress, right? Mm. Because that's going to lead, obviously, to complications and issues. Mm. And alcohol is going
to
be...
I've never heard of alcohol being a solution. To be honest. Anyway. Right, when you distill it all down, and this is something that all my patients will know comfortably about me, we're always talking about the liver. And the liver is central to this. The liver is the main mediator of stress and of metabolic health and the state of your glycogen stores, the management of insulin, the management of every component in your blood. So it is super important to pay attention to liver health. It's the main actor. Obesity is not essential to any of this, but healthy liver, non-fatty liver, a liver that can function and do its work is really, really significant. So all my patients know that it's almost always a part of a script. It's always a part of our conversation. There are indicators in our symptoms that will point to the liver, particular times that we're sleepless at night, gastritis, hiatus hernias, things like that. So, and mood is a major sort of marker of liver health. And just so that people know, it's none of this is about calories. It's not about you know, making sure that you're reducing the number of calories that you have. It's the type of calorie that you have that's so key. And, you know, again, distilling all of the information down, we move back to something we've spoken before here, which is about ketogenic diet. It's about moving towards a diet that is low in sugars.
Mm. Yeah. So sugar is not your friend.
Yeah.
Sugar is generally not your friend. Again, there are different types of sugars. Highly refined sugars are definitely not your friend. Anything that is noticeably sweet is probably not your friend.
Does honey fall into that category?
Yeah, unfortunately
it does. But it's supposedly so good.
Well, look, it does have some benefits. It comes along with a number of minerals and elements that are useful, you know, and propolis and so on. But fundamentally, it's sugar.
Oh, my word.
It is. It's an unpleasant truth.
So,
do you see a move where food items are now being produced a lot sweeter, incorporating a different taste?
Since the 70s.
Yeah.
Basically, most of our lives, this has been the case. And that it's not a coincidence that at the same time, there's been an exponential increase in obesity and diabetes and cardiovascular disease and Alzheimer's, et cetera, et cetera. You know, if you look when I look across the board in terms of the patients that I see, I can see a reason to transition almost every single patient to a ketogenic diet because there will be benefits to them. So whether you're talking about ADHD, autism, obviously obesity, all the metabolic diseases, Alzheimer's, et cetera. Everybody benefits from a shift.
Now, you talk about a ketogenic diet. Is this the same as the carnivore diet?
So there's a number of different ways you can... there's a whole spectrum, basically, from pure vegan to pure carnivore. You can eat in a ketogenic manner, in a ketogenic way.
Okay, so the best is to work out what is good for
you. What suits you, yeah. And what suits you, what suits your culture, what suits your palate. But yeah, from pure vegan through to pure carnivore, you can be ketogenic. It's really about the sugars.
Well... Now that we've identified the main culprit, you see all these farms around us here?
Yeah.
We're going to turn them into parking lots.
They kind of are already. I mean, look around you. Yeah, no, it's a curious... Look, there are many, many uses for sugar. I mean, we can do all sorts of things with sugar and sugar cane, et cetera, that don't necessarily end up in our stomachs. But each of us individually just have to think a little bit more carefully about what we're choosing to eat.
Very interesting. And there's sugar is hidden in all sorts of things. You don't think that, well, shall we say, a lot of the diet options, you know, the low-fat options, if you look at milks and yogurts and all of those things, they may have less fat. But they're guaranteed to have a lot more sugar to make it palatable. Otherwise, it would taste like wallpaper paste.
We've touched on this before, but that is the what you've just talked about. There is the significant problem in the last 50, 60 years. Is the shift away from fats, and the net result of that has been more carbs. So for people to manufacture, you know, that we've had this whole food pyramid story, which has been completely debunked. 20 years ago, it was completely debunked. But we've stuck with it. It's still in our common lexicon that you have the food pyramid and at the base is cereals. It is completely wrong. And we're trying to catch up, actually. We're trying to catch up with the established, with what is known. We do not need cereals as the base of our diet. It is... That's what's driving the problem.
So the breakfast of champions is not cereal or even, I would imagine, porridge or any of those things, especially if you add a liberal sprinkling of what makes you smile. Why is life like that?
Because a boiled egg will do you a lot more good.
You see, there's nothing nicer than one of those ice cream sundae things.
Yes.
You see, makes you this is smiling.
I'm already smiling. I'm already
bad for you. Bad.
Well, you know, sugar is like very similar in its effect on the brain to cocaine. You get a strong dopamine reaction to consuming sugar. And so we hunt it. The brain hunts it. It wants it.
So what about sweeteners?
Yeah, sweeteners generally avoid. You know, we're talking about receptor sensitivity. The sweeter your food, the less sensitive your taste buds are, the less sensitive your sweet receptors are on your tongue. Now, the net result of that is that you want sweeter things.
Mm.
Yeah. So whether it's a whether you're using artificial sweeteners or anything else, you the net effect over time, and that's what we've seen. Like the weird thing with artificial sweeteners is that they've made no difference.
Oh, okay. Well, they've made a lot of difference to the manufacturers. The whole marketing thing behind the diet craze is that a lot of the products that are manufactured, a bit like the supplements business, they don't do particularly anything good for you, but the psychology of it is, take this and whoa, you're going to look like that.
But the exciting thing is that the receptors on your tongue replace themselves every 7 days.
Oh, do they?
So it only takes 7 days to get a completely new set of taste buds.
Is that
and
so?
So you only have to do without the sugar for 7 days, and then you'll start realizing that water is sweet, milk is sweet. Things that you would never have imagined are sweet or sweet.
So, what part does the brain play in all of this?
Central. It's fundamental to the whole thing.
Hmm.
Yeah, everything comes from the brain.
Okay. All right.
Which is very interesting when you start to understand the physiology of senses, because hearing is a brain function. It's everyone's just an ear function. Well, not really. The ear plays a critical role, but without the brain to decode what's coming in, it's nothing.
But equally, sound can be healing, as you know very well.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah? The melody, indeed. The tone, the timbre, these things can have an impact on how you feel. And if it can have an impact on how you feel, that's having an impact on your hormones, on your nervous system, etc. So,
stunning.
Equally light. You know, everything that comes into the brain has an effect on our health.
This is peculiar that we operate these extraordinarily complex machines that are our bodies, and we punish them. We ruin. If you drove your car like you drive your body, whatever, me, I'd be driving a banger, really.
Yeah,
you think about it. No, your car must be serviced and maintained and cleaned and polished and, you know, all that. But the body, let's hoy the chips and the pizza and, let's hoy braai. Braai. And then, loaded with the brandy and coke. We just do terrible things. And ultimately, we pay the price. Because your health, without your health, you've got nothing.
Yep.
Nothing.
So the conversation here is all about stepping towards consciousness, stepping towards mindfulness, being aware of what you're doing, thinking a little bit more carefully about what you're doing.
It's an interesting approach to the business of doctoring, because ultimately I think it's true to say that in the conventional sense there is a space for medicine, and that's when you are not well. The way your homeopathic practice works is maybe start looking at the reason that you're not well, rather than fixing with a pill or a potion that thing, that symptom,
100%,
which 100%. Which makes so much more sense.
Yeah. Remember that homeopathic law I spoke about early on in our discussions, that you have to identify the obstacles to cure. There's no point in treating unless you've done that.
Well, surely one is looking for relief from symptoms as an urgent thing.
If you just want relief from symptoms, then just go and see a GP.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, that's
don't come to me.
That's symptom relief. That's symptom relief. No, that's symptom relief. But if you want to cure, if you want to heal, you have to look at it differently.
That's a very strong position, and I think it's a very fresh position.
Yeah.
Because we are talking ultimately about long term. You know, short term is one thing. You have an itch, you want to scratch it. You got it. But why did you get the itch in the first place?
Listen, there's a place for symptom relief.
There's definitely, of course there is.
Absolutely, there's a place. In extremis, you want to not be in pain, for example. And no one is better than that at doing that than a GP or a Western medical practitioner.
Do you have homeopathic pain relief that works?
I use acupuncture fundamentally for that.
And it works?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Really, I'm coming to see you now. Clear the deck, so I'm on the way.
It's all about promoting healing. You know, fundamentally, our belief is that it's the body that heals. Mm. At the end of the day, you got to get that thing working. It has to be focused, and it has to have the resources, and it needs to be in the right state to heal. And, you know, obviously rest is necessary, nourishment is necessary, and focus is necessary. And the acupuncture and homeopathy, their real gift is helping the body focus its attention, decide what it is that needs to be done.
Is it ever too late to change your approach to looking after yourself? In other words, yeah. I think it's fair to say folk generally, once they are afflicted with a condition, are now desperately trying to find the cure.
Yeah.
Sometimes the damage has been done. But in your opinion, is it ever too late? Clearly, when you're dead, it's too
late. That's why, you know, you want to go and see a well-trained homeopath, someone who has the basic medicine, so that we know when we shouldn't be messing around, that needs to be referred on.
Okay. But there
are cases.
What I'm talking about, though, is, you know, you may have a syndrome that's been with you for an awfully long time, but it's not too late to seek alternative solutions to the problem.
You can always have an impact. Yeah, you can always, while there's life, there's hope.
And that's a pretty profound statement, I think, where we kind of wrap it for today. Where there's life, there's hope. But it's more than life. You want to live well.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe there's any point in if you're in big trouble, you know, end stage, and then you go into one of these institutions that plugs you into the wall, and they keep you in the state of, I think, suspended animation. You're alive technically, you know, maybe a machine is breathing for you, but you're you know, they're just racking up the bills, because there you go, you're in ICU, and look at that. But there's no chance of a happy ever after. So, and we are very opposed to what we would do for our pets. If you've got an animal that is in pain and no chance of recovery, you let it go gently. We don't do that in our Western approach. I don't think any society really advocates that, except possibly very advanced. I know the Japanese were quite keen on just going somewhere quietly and transitioning.
Sorting things out.
Yeah, but I think that's a discussion we need to have as well.
Yeah.
Because I think it's an important one.
I'd be happy to do that.
So maybe we will look at that in a future edition of the Friday morning conversation with Bruce Thompson. He is practicing homeopath in Bolito on a Friday, and then for the rest of the week he's up in the highway area. But a good man to know and a good man to consult with for anything medical and possibly even psychological, because there's a lot in that as well. Hey?
Yeah.
That's where, I mean, homeopathic treatment is very focused there, mental and emotional state.
Because that's a growing concern in our modern society, mental health.
Very true.
Big one. So there's lots to talk about, and this is an ongoing conversation. But Bruce, thanks for joining us.
Can I just mention my phone number, just in case anyone wants to?
Of course you can, and it'll be up as a podcast, folks, so you don't have to try and crash the car to get your pen out to write it down. You'll pick it up later, but go ahead.
083-7899-328, that's the WhatsApp number. You can send me any message, any questions, any queries.
And there we leave it for today. It's 29 minutes to 9, and the morning show continues.